Hello and good morning. Thank you for joining us. Yes, we are live today. No recording of Kevin and I. It will be live for 2 full hours. But we'll kind of have our regular schedule, at least for a while, beginning next week. You know, I was in New York Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week for a conference. And what's great about that, it was a J.P. Morgan conference, and it was fantastic, you know, great stuff. Tony Blair, the former prime minister, was one of the speakers. Jamie Dimon was. I mean, they kind of went all out, right? It was good. It was a good meeting. But I was sitting there listening to their economist talk, and I'd asked my fair share of questions. I really had. I'd ask a lot of questions, so I really couldn't, you know, chime in again. It really wasn't appropriate. But I was sitting there as they were explaining that the market, the economy, both, okay, in this case, they're not always the same, but in this case, both are on a sugar high. Not all bad. He says, you know, it's okay. You know, things are all right. But it's on a sugar high. And I really wanted to raise my hand. I'd been listening to him for a while and talking about different things. And it was pretty apparent he's not a big fan of Trump. He had to give him some credit on a couple of things. But as an example, when he's explaining the tax code, it's like, or, you know, the new tax cut, it's like, I like the corporate tax laws. That's good because, you know, America was not competitive. And so, you know, basically jobs are shifting overseas. Corporations had no option except to shift production overseas. No option. So the economist admitting that. But beyond that, it was like, but I don't know why I didn't want him to do a personal tax cut. It didn't make any sense to him. You know, and the first thought I wanted to raise my hand and say, on what planet do you think that the tax reform for corporations would have passed without throwing a bone to individuals? That would have been overwhelming. I'm sure the Democrats would have supported that. They didn't support it with tax cuts for middle-income people. The only people that got hurt in this tax bill are the wealthy. That's it. The wealthy in blue states in particular. That's all. It got me thinking. This is true later. I was literally relaying the story of, you know, what did you learn? What was going on? And I'm relaying the story at the office, and I say, yeah, it's like it was a political statement. You know, I don't understand how tax cuts are bad. And it's a sugar high. And I went, wait a minute, what did I just say? Political statement. That's what it is. And I'm sitting here thinking, and I realized I did want to raise my hand, and I wanted to ask him why, in a very serious way when I was there. Why are you saying it's a sugar high? When you make fundamental changes to the tax code, they're either good for the economy or they're bad. Not short term. It's not a sugar high. It's not an injection. Now, if you make a sugar high, would be something like you can just get all the write-offs this year. And business is getting some of that. Okay, so we get some of that. You can write off all your capital equipment in 1 year. That's great. But that has nothing to do with the long-term competitive nature of U.S. corporations and now not moving jobs overseas. None. In fact, I believe jobs will be coming into the United States from other countries. Why? Because we now also are embracing the idea of being energy self-sufficient. It's okay to dig a hole in our soil to produce energy here. Instead of paying people that hate us to bring it from over there. It's a weird concept, but what it's done is it's also enabling us to become the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, the cleanest burning fuel we have. outside of nuclear, of course. But nobody's building any more nuclear plants, but we can put a hole in the ground and get more natural gas until we have all renewables, which is some time off, but we'll get there. But we are the place you come if you want to build a plant that uses a lot of energy because it's the cheapest energy in the world. We have rule of law. We take it for granted. We literally do. We literally take for granted that there are laws to protect us. Laws to protect our property. We take that for granted. But you don't have to think very far at all to realize that, for example, it's very hard to own land in Mexico. And you can't as a foreigner. Venezuela, it's not gone so well if you own property there. Why do you think the Chinese buy so much property in the United States? In London? Why? Their favorite cities in the world? I don't know. Maybe they are. Rule of law. It's not going to be taken away. We take all these things for granted, and yet we don't realize that as we drive corporations overseas because of stupid tax laws, that has lasting impacts on the negative side. When we undo that, it has lasting, not sugar high. It has those kind of results. So I was sitting there relaying this, and I went, wow, it was a political statement. Now, imagine that. This is one of the most well-thought-of economists, if you will, spokesmen, not economists, because none of them can predict the future. And there's so much arrogance there. It's off the charts. They all think they know what the future is going to be because, hey, we're the smartest people in the room. Nobody knows the future. And nobody's ever going to ask them, well, I mean, why have you been so negative for so long? Bottom line, we have to be really careful what we're listening to, what we're grabbing on to, and what we're doing with our own investment thought, even our own investment statements. For example, me. Do I think of the world under a far-left president like Obama as one that won't work? I better get out. We're all going to die. Do I think of it that way? However, I swing it back and then I say, because Trump's done a good job, period. 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 On the economy. Not on human relationships, things like that, but on the economy. Bush, do I give him a pass? When there's bad policy, tax increases, things that are bad for the economy? Do I give him a pass? We got to be careful with that. We have to be super careful with that because it does steer us wrong. We're talking about some really smart people here that don't like the president so much that instead of embracing a fundamental, beautiful piece of legislation, which is corporate tax reform, unbelievable for the long-term competitive nature, jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, growth rate, pile on. One of the most important things that has happened to the tax code since Reagan. I think probably the most important. I can't think of anything that even comes close. So I'm going to go with most important. Okay? Since Reagan. And we call it a sugar high. If you simply isolate and don't ask economists what would be an important tax code change by any president. Not who, not during our time. No, he did that. Oh, that was, no, I don't like him. So it's a sugar high. Everybody would agree that making U.S. corporations competitive again in the world is one of the most important, if not the most important, things we can do for the long-term security of our economy. But because Trump did it, it's a sugar high. Now, that's all right. It doesn't matter. Who cares? You're right. If all it is yet another person, excuse me, taking a shot at Trump, because that's what we do now. We don't take shots at Hillary. We don't take shots at the left. We don't talk about how stupid socialism is and it doesn't work anywhere. All we have to do is look at Venezuela today. All yada, 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 yada. I know, we'll do it better than Venezuela. I got it. I know, we'll do it better than everybody else. It'll be experiment number 185. And this time it'll work. Give me a break. We suspend all disbelief. And I get it. It's just another person to hate Trump. It's not. When we say sugar high, what we're saying is this is going to go away very soon. So what should you do with your investments if it should go away very soon? You got to get defensive. You don't see the world correctly. You don't see the world as a growing economic engine. You see it as about ready to step off a cliff, don't you? So when we say sugar high, what we're really telling people is they probably ought to buy bonds, which are miserable and losing money because interest rates are going higher. That's not a predictive statement. That's already been true. Here's a predictive statement. They're going to keep going higher because the economy is doing very well, and the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates and have promised to continue to do so, unless things change dramatically. That's why it's important. We don't see things clearly when we make political statements. That's the discussion I'd like to have with them. Are there aspects of this bill that are sugar high? Of course. The one-year write-off is one of those. But I don't know what a sugar high is. Employees get bonuses. I know it's, according to Nancy Pelosi, they're peanuts or whatever she said. Scraps. But they're not. But when we have correct policy, it doesn't matter for a year. It matters forever. And so when you make a political statement like that, that's what it is. This is not an economic statement of truth. Wow. Now, I could be totally out to lunch, but I got to tell you, for the last couple of days as I related this, I've just been going, how can a company that big not have somebody there? I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of employees there. But let's just talk about the people on the money management side. There's thousands of them. And nobody raises their hand to say, I think getting economic policy right, having a good corporate, is a long-term positive. I don't think this is a one-year bump. Nobody? And I'm not saying this is original thought. What I'm trying to say is, isn't this an economic fact? Is there anybody that disagrees that fundamentally good policy is good policy, period? Not just for a sugar high, a one-year thing. It's a fundamentally good, like oiling the wheels. Does that mean it only goes good for a few feet? No. grease on the wheels is good now, a year from now, the next year, it's good. Always. It's good. Greasing the wheels of corporations is good. So I got to thinking about this, and I got to go to a break. But and maybe you have more examples, but what else? And what do I have to guard against? For me? How am I clouding my vision by politics on things that are not political? We say. Are all things political now? Are they? We can't agree that on anything that we need to protect the borders. We can't. That's a political statement? Making sure people are documented coming into our country? That is a political statement I just made? Seriously? Then why do we have borders? Seriously? Why? Why bother with any border agents? Invite everybody in. Well, that's ridiculous. How is that ridiculous? What are you saying? You can look somebody in the eyes and go, oh, he's so sweet. Let him in. No, can't let that one in. I don't think he looks right. We can't agree on anything. All right, that's another subject, but this is not another subject when it comes to economic policy and the markets and our investment choices. We have to keep politics out. Must. Very important. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. I do want your calls, need your calls, and your emails. So please do shoot them over, and we'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Boy, what a week. The week of the Boise Open here. Fantastic turnout yesterday. I couldn't believe how many people were out. Well, I guess I could because I heard there were 7,000 tickets sold because it included the Cheap Trick concert last night, which was fun. That was really fun. That was an unexpected pleasure. It was incredible. I thought they were terrific. Absolutely terrific. A bunch of old guys up there. They were terrific. It was so much fun. I and in the audience, you couldn't believe. You know, because they pan the audience all the time. You see all the people there. It's a bunch of oldies like me. You know, it's just crazy. Just bouncing around out there having a ball. It was, I don't know. It was crazy. Great. It really promoted this year, the Boise Open has been. It's just been incredible. So I've enjoyed it. And now, of course, we're down in the championship this weekend. And let's face it, today, though, they're going to be way down out there because something is happening this afternoon. I just can't quite get my mind wrapped around it. It's going to be an amazing game, isn't it? Oklahoma State. This is so big, so big. It's such a big sports weekend here in Boise and how neat it is to have these kinds of events. It was really a kick and great to see so many people turn out. Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Please join us and let's join Jim right now. Jim, thanks for calling.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Yeah, if Oklahoma State can pull it off, they will have bragging rights in the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
I mean, over OU.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's true. You're right.
Excuse me.
I said you're right. I'd forgotten about that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess that's one big motivation for them.
It would be, wouldn't it? You bet it would. Yep.
You mentioned J.P. Morgan. I got one of those little books, and it's a guide to the markets.
Fantastic books, aren't they?
Good grief. I mean, I like analysis, but good God, man. I mean, they've analyzed. There's graphs all over the
There media. Are, and they change a number of them, not all of them quarterly, but phenomenal data. I love them for that. I really do.
Well, yeah, there's such a thing, I think, possibly, as a paralysis of analysis,
I totally agree with that, too, yes.
I can imagine the groups of people studying statistics, I guess, in college and getting employed by these guys.
Mm-hmm. No,
anyway.
It's quite something. It is amazing, and the amount of data, it's really amazing. It truly is. it's astounding how much data that they pile into those things. And I actually, as I'm going through it, Jim, I've used them for years here. For some of the there's charts. In fact, I don't carry it with me. I haven't for a while. But periodically, I just carry it in my stuff that I bring to the show, because you just flip open a page and it's like, well, okay, there's a monologue. I can go with that. I mean, it is so, there, as you point out, there's so much data in there. But some of the charts keep popping up because they are so good. You know, where's the market 6 months after interest rates have risen? That's one of my favorite ones, right? Because those are important data points to look at. And one of the reasons why 3 years ago, when they talked about raising interest rates, and everybody out there on Wall Street said rising interest rates is bad for stocks, I just trolled that out, chart out, and I look at it and I go, 100% of the time when interest rates are low and they raise interest rates, the market's higher.
Yep.
So in other words, all this market analysis you hear all is noise and incorrect and wrong. So I think those types of charts are wonderful to have.
One thing about it, though, that I've noticed, you know, sometimes when you have a color graph, you know, like I'm looking at one, it shows all the countries on the left and then years.
With the PMI, the PMI index, the hot and cold, green to red, orange.
Well, see, the thing is, there is no key. I mean, you've got to kind of guess what the colors mean.
Yeah, that's the one that lists all the countries on it, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's talking about PMI, which is the Purchasing Managers Index being, in other words, is manufacturing increasing or is it cooling? So you want the hotter or redder numbers. I think yellow, red out there means it's increasing over certain levels, usually 55, 60. It's in growth mode.
Actually, the one I'm looking at is not red to green, but it says a year-over-year headline inflation by country and region quarterly.
Okay.
However, like I say, I mean, there are various colors, but the colors aren't, I mean, there's quite a few colors.
Yeah.
And it'd take a whole page probably to explain the colors.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, another thing I wanted to mention, you also mentioned accounting. Now, I'm no CPA, but I do have a degree in accounting, and it seems to me that, well, accounting basically is black and white.
Yes.
But it seems like accounting can be used for political reasons or economics, you know, like you were saying, to write off. If you bought something, you know, a piece of equipment that went over 10 years, you depreciate it over 10 years. But you're saying now they can just write it off all in 1 year,
Which
doesn't seem correct. And so, you know, I would be against that myself.
Well, I am too on that aspect. I have no problem with that, with saying, no, if you're in a heavy recession, we'd like to push some people to buy things they wouldn't normally. That's a good idea, but not when the economy is doing well. We didn't need it, but it's okay.
It's good for that, but it's not good to reflect on the balance sheet or the income statement appropriately how things are going.
Correct. I agree. It's not just that, but you also are writing off things that are, on a one-year basis. You're distorting the economics of it. I just think that you have should not be juicing a good economy with little things like that. But that is a little thing. That has nothing to do with the fundamental shift or even what J.P. Morgan's economist was talking about. He did not mention that as being the reason why. It's just one of the reasons why all of this is sugar high, and I came away eventually coming to the conclusion that it was a political statement.
Well, you know, you were saying kind of that you wanted to raise your hand, and you said nobody did raise their hands, but apparently you didn't raise your hand.
No. I had already asked my questions. I have no problem raising my hand. I'm one of those guys. So
yeah.
I try to keep, I sit on my hands often because I'm kind of, what is his name? Was it? I can't think of the guy on Welcome Back, Kotter, right? He's like standing up in the front row. Oh, I got a question. Right? Horseshack, that's who it is. Exactly, Horseshack. So I feel like Horseshack at these meetings. Ask me. And so anyway, I feel a little bit like that at most meetings. So I had already asked a couple questions, and then when he was talking about this, I just felt like it was not appropriate. And
yeah,
I also knew.
Seem like a know-it-all or whatever.
Or just trying to get attention, whatever it is. And it's not. I was hoping, but he didn't stick around, that I might be able to have a one-on-one conversation. And also, it was one of those that I really wanted to sit down with somebody and not attack them. I wanted to come to an understanding. Why are you saying this? I don't understand how you can say that it's a sugar high no economist in the world would say it's a sugar high by fundamentally changing your tax code. There are aspects of what you're talking about I would agree with, but that are just a one-time boost. But to say this is sugar high is misleading for where the what the market's going to do next year. Are we going to crash next year? He won't say. Of course he's not going to say, because then he's going to be wrong. So they just, economists like Mosley, right, walk this tightrope. And act frankly, he's been very negative. He's been wrong for a while. So it's not, he's not exactly called everything correctly. In fact, there is a group that does, and I kind of pay attention to them because they have been right all the way through this crisis. And I find that pretty astounding. I don't know who else has been.
Well, you know, as opposed to accounting, which I consider kind of black and white, economics is great, totally great. You know, it's kind of like you have five economists in a room and you'll get 10 opinions or whatever.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely. And usually it's you get two from each person as to your numbers, well, because like they talk out of both sides of their mouth.
Like you say, I mean, nobody knows the future, and yet they think they do, and they'll come up with all these numbers and everything. And, well, two different people can look at the same set of numbers and get two different opinions.
Right. I don't know what value it adds when they just sit around and go, you know, well, if this happens and that happens, then this will happen. If that happens, then this happens. But on the other hand, it could go the other way, and there it is. And thank you for joining us today. What did they say? Nothing. Yeah. They're politicians. That's what they are. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. They give you both answers. That way they're right. Anyway.
Yep.
All right, Jim.
Well, anyway, take care, and maybe it'll be a good football game. I don't know. I don't have ESPN, so maybe I'll turn on the radio.
Well, you better. This is the season, man. It's right here. I mean, it's not the season, but it is. It could be.
I like football, but I'm not a BSU fan. But, you know, I'll watch
What are you trying to do? Get yourself mugged? Come on. You live in Boise. Everybody's a BSU fan. Knock it off.
Well, I think they're too full of it around here. But then again, you know, everybody gets so full of football, it's kind of, you know, it's lost its sports thing now. It's all, I don't know, it's whatever. It's built up too much.
Yeah, that's so true. That's true. All right,
anyway,
Jim, have a good day.
Well, at least I think BSU will have a challenge.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a heck of a challenge.
This will be the biggest challenge they've had all year.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, take care and have a great week.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Charlene, I think you say you have an answer to our sugar high, but I got to take a break here for Fox News, so we're going to hear from Charlene in Boise next, and hopefully you can line us up at 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. That was a great concert, Ray, I'm telling you. They did great. I couldn't believe how good they sounded. I'm telling you, that was something else. That was fun. And for those of you who are out to Cheap Trick, probably you're not even out of bed yet, so I'm not even not talking at all to the choir here, you know? But there were, 7,000 people? It was crazy pouring out on the fairway. It was awesome. Absolutely fantastic. What a neat, fun time. Bunch of old people out there. It really was. You know, it's so funny going to these concerts that they have in Boise. In the old days, we didn't have so many. And just seeing all the people and go, they're not old. That's it's a reflection of me right there. Wow. Anyway, great stuff. Great stuff. Thanks for playing that. And let's go to the our number, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. What did I do, Ray? I did it again. Fix my little arrow thing, will you please? All right, I'm just going to go to the phone. I think it'll work. Charlene, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good. I couldn't even screw up the phones. I hit the wrong button, but it didn't. It knew it was me, and it just let it go. So yeah.
It's Dave. Don't worry about that. I don't know if I'm going to duplicate what Jim said because I was talking to your call screener when Jim first came on.
Oh, okay.
But I'm a news junkie, and I love your program. I usually listen to you on a podcast because my husband puts it on a thumb drive. And I drive around in my car during the day and listen to my podcast.
Oh, how cool is that? That's neat. Good for you.
It is, but, you know, something came up last week on the podcast, and then again last week in the sugar high thing, I said, I'm going to get up early and listen to Dave. So here I am. Anyway, what happens is I watch a program on Fox called The Daily Briefing with Dana Perino.
Mm-hmm.
And if Sarah Huckabee Sanders is having the press briefing, she covers it. Well, last week she did, and she had, I don't know his name because I didn't write it down, but Trump's economic advisor was very personable and positive and happy and full of facts. He's been nagging her for weeks to please let him talk to the press. So he came on with four charts. I know your caller last week was talking about charts. These charts were a trend chart. He looked back at unemployment, factory growth, employment, all these different things. He took them back 8 years. Okay. He had the trends with Obama in blue, and they were trending down, every single one. And if you considered what would have happened if Obama or his policies had stayed in place, the blue line was headed right down, straight down. Then there was the election of Trump, and all of a sudden the red line was straight up. Everything. And you know the press, they hate him. And what they really complained about, the guy did take questions, and I have seldom seen someone that answered questions as well as he did, with a smile on his face and facts. And the thing that they wanted to pin him down on was factories and employment in factories.
Yeah.
Because they said, that's a sugar high. He said, no, 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 it's not. He says, let me tell you why. Because the factories have been built. And now, because they are built, they will continue to hire people because the factories are in place.
Yes.
And he was so good. And I don't know if I could find it on the net or not. I just tried Googling a few things and didn't get much luck. Maybe I should have binged them. I don't know.
Yes. Well, that's fantastic. That's good.
But I watch that every day, and sometimes my husband yells at the television. I mean, he does. He does really yell at the television. But last year on the election, we were coming back from the dentist the day of the election, and we had never seen Trump signs coming home. They were everywhere.
Wow.
Coming down McMillan. And we vote absentee because my husband's unable to see. But I couldn't believe it. We were hoping that Trump would get in, but we just didn't have any idea if we were going to win or not. And all these Trump signs were all along the road. And I said, where did they come from?
Yeah.
So I don't know, Dave, but I quote you often, and I love you because you're so optimistic. And you're a clear thinker, and I get to hear you driving around in my car, running my errands and doing things.
Well, I appreciate you taking me with you. That's nice.
I do, and I'm an old fud. I'm 80.
80 years old. You sound so young. I want to be like you when I'm 80. That's what I'm going to aspire to be.
Well, my voice didn't grow up.
Well, that's not what I meant. I meant the joy in your laughter and your quick wit. That's what I mean.
Well, I tell you, the attitude is everything. And I had my career was in computers. I started in 1963, just me and all the guys. And I had a boss in New Hampshire that said, 80% of success is showing up.
Yeah, it is.
And he was so good. I'm a graduate of Boise High.
So oh, wow. Got all the way, went full circle then.
I came back to take care of my parents and lost my mom last year at 100.
Wow, that's that bodes well for you.
Yes, I have good genes, but I wanted to let you know that, yes, you are great. I love you. I've been listening to you since we returned in 1999, and you're always on my mind, and I love to talk about your attitude.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much. You just put a smile in my heart.
Good, good. Well, keep it up, Dave. I've turned the radio back on again now.
All right, great. Thanks for your phone call. You call every time, all the time.
I will.
All right,
will.
Good. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. How very sweet. Thank you, Charlene. That was very kind. It is an interesting, weird time we live in. And I do think that it's so important that I hate the idea, the words we use and all this. And I'm happy to talk in the second hour a little bit more about some of the different little observations of New York and if you will, the elite money managers and things like that. It's very different place. But a lot of decisions, a lot of politics, and certainly the media comes out of there. But it is very skewed. It's a very weird time. And no, the president does himself no favors by picking fights with everybody. That's his problem. But it certainly is not new that any conservative thought is designed to be shouted down. And that's very sad. It is very sad because it misleads people into what good policy is and what it isn't. You know, we can argue. Two people can argue a point, or see things differently. That's honorable and, I think, good. But when we shout down the other side, we don't listen, we don't take it in, we can't learn. We can't grow. And that's where we are right now. It's kind of sad. And bullying people or beating them up because they support somebody you don't, that's a tragedy, frankly. And that's unfortunately where we are. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Got to take our final break this hour. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. And by the way, if you want to contact us during the week, please do. Obviously, you can call us, but we also have a pretty extensive website that you can certainly look on there for articles, calculators. We've got podcasts of programs on there. All kinds of information help you with your financial planning. And also, certainly shoot us comments as well. Hey, we want to talk about this. Would you cover this? And so on. We'd love to cover what you want to talk about, and it's okay to ask a question. Many times during the week, I've brought on, as you know, brought on a question that somebody had sent in an email. So please do that. Love to hear from you. Now, you know, in the next hour, I've been asked this question so much. And so I'm not going to really call it the education segment, you know, like we often have, where I just kind of dig into something. But at the beginning of the next hour here, right after Fox News, top of the hour, I'm going to talk about Ken Fisher, the guy that advertises all the time, right? You know, the annuities are bad and your advisor is bad and so on, because I'm asked a lot of questions about that. So I'll talk a little bit about that and what it is. So as far as the education goes, though, what does a financial advisor do, right? Do they all sell annuities, or do they all hate annuities, and all of these different types of things that there are quite a few misconceptions. But how is Ken Fisher's record? You know, it's really not publicized much, but it doesn't take a lot of digging to find out how well the investments have done, but that brings up the bigger question, right? Is that what advisors do, is just invest money for people? Is that all they do? Is that what I do? I think it's a fair question. What expectations do you have? What do people do? So I thought I'd take a couple minutes and talk about that at the beginning of the hour. You know, I guess when I to kind of, if you will, tie together my point of this political statement, the sugar high thought, the economy's on a sugar high, the market's on a sugar high, implies it's not real or good economic policy when it is. So to me, when we make political comments like that, it says, A, I'm so arrogant, I know everything, and I just don't going to worry about it, and this guy pisses me off, so I'm going to case everything negatively. Or it's laziness. Like, we really have no depth of thought. We just go, this is ridiculous. It's a sugar high. Yeah, I like that. I like that statement. And then everybody starts babbling sugar high. That's what they talk about. Hopeful, as we head into the elections, that it is a sugar high, that people won't buy into the fact that this is a fundamental shift and a fundamental growth shift. I think it's just bias. I think it's just bias. It's just, I hate Trump, that's it. When we have people like George Will calling for an epic collapse, he's not even an economist, but okay. He's George Will, and therefore I'm smart, I'm arrogant, and everybody likes to know what I think about things that I know nothing about. And I hate Trump. So let me think. Epic collapse. I'm not going to define what an epic collapse is, because then I could be held accountable. Is epic a 20% normal bear market? Is it a 50% collapse? Is it like it all goes away? What does epic mean? Is there like a number of a collapse? Does it mean we head into a recession? I don't know what epic means. But it sounds really, really bad. George Will, anti-Trumper, epic collapse coming. Optimism, another quote that I loved reading. This was just wonderful. This was off of Yahoo Finance. I just saw it and I went, really? optimism is so high, it suggests recession is imminent. Oh, let me try to break that down. I'm not sure. Optimism is so high, so that means people are spending money. The economy is really good. People are optimistic about the future, so they'd be hiring. They would be spending money because they're optimistic. So that suggests a recession is imminent. Got it. Now, that's maybe, I'm going to have to warp my mind. I know, maybe I can go get some heavy medication and get my mind wrapped around that truth. Kind of like looking at a yellow dot on paper. I think you'd have to be high as a kite. I remember going to like a modern art thing, and there was like a yellow dot. Seriously, it was like done in the 1940s or 60s or something. It's 1960s. I remember it now. And it was like hanging. It took up the whole wall. You know, this is Joe Schmo's great art. It literally was a yellow dot. A framed yellow dot on a white background. You would have to medicate forever to find that dot fascinating. I'm just saying. This is... Wow. This is it that for me. This is a kind of economic statement that's like, oh, yeah. But see, this is what parades for. So that's why I say economic news is most often like financial pornography. You can't watch this stuff all day and not have it impact you. It does. And so when we sit there and read and read and read, and every article, everything is biased, everybody hates Trump, and you just read this stuff, sugar high, optimism so high, we're going to crash, it's going to happen in 2020, it was going to happen in 19, I'm sure it was going to happen in 16, and now I have a whole charts. I did this last week, I won't bore you with details, but everybody just keeps doubling down on stupid. Well, I was wrong when the market was at 8,000 and I said it was going to crash. When it was at 10 and I said it was going to crash. And then I said it was going to crash again at 15,000, 18,000, 20,000. I just keep doubling down. It's going to crash. I swear to goodness it will. Like, I want to read that guy. Why? But it gets in our head, doesn't it? It just gets in there. And it gets in the back of our head. Interest rates rising is really, 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 really bad. Well, why are interest rates rising? Because the economy is really, 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 really good. Okay, so wait a minute. Let me understand. So it's really bad that it's really good. Yes. Ouch. Oh, that hurts my head. Unbelievable. Retail sales are staying really strong. Well, but that's because of the about you. There's so much debt. Look at the student loan data. Okay, pick a chart, data mine, and you can make a case for anything. Anything. When every sentence we talk about the economy, when everything we ever say is yes, but. See, think about it this way. Let's think about it in our relationships. Pull away from politics, pull away from the economy, things like that, because you've got all the statements of yeah, but. Okay, I already know. You already got all the arguments. So if you are wired to say, and you've been listening to enough financial pornography, you can go, hey, yeah, but. What about student loans? Yeah, but. What about autos? Auto loans that are in default? Huh? You got all the yeah, buts. Yeah, but. What about Europe? What about Italy? Yeah, but. What about the trade war? What's going on with China? Yeah, but. There's always yeah, buts. But see, if we take that and we pretend, like in other aspects of our life, think of it this way. Would that work in other aspects of your life? Think about that in your relationships. If you yeah, but at everything, I love you. But let me talk about a couple things I'd like to fix for you. I just don't think your lady's going to like that all the time. I mean, it's okay to have an honest conversation. I just don't like the way you approach it. I get that, okay? But I don't think my lady needs me to sit down every day and point out all the things that she's doing wrong. I sure love you. You're so beautiful. But, you know, I think you should work on this thing or that thing. We don't need to do the yeah buts, right? So think about how badly that'd be in your relationship. They could bump into your friend. It's like, Ray, I think you're an amazing guy. And I do think Ray's an amazing guy. But Ray, they got a couple issues, and I think we need to work on those things. I mean, if after a while, Ray's not going to be my friend. He doesn't need to hear that stuff every day. But we do that with our finances, and we don't see it. We got to start seeing it. Don't yeah but everything. Sometimes good news is good news. Period. Let it go. Period. Don't yeah but everything. Some things are plain good. All right, we got to take a break for Fox News. We'll be back after that. Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and these are my opinions and my opinions only. They're not this station, broker dealer, anything like that. They're just my opinions. And of course, as I tell you all the time, I hope over the last 30 years, can't believe it's been way over 30 years. Well, almost like 35 years we've been doing this, Ray. How long have you been on? It's got to be you've been here 30, haven't you? John DeWayne hired you on the radio, and I was here long before that. Anyway, long time. So anyway, it's a long time. And we are not here to tell you what to buy and sell. And we're the opposite of that. It's that is just silliness to think that today you should buy Apple and tomorrow you should not. It's Google. No, sell, buy, sell. No, don't do that. Own the great corporations of the world and you become like Warren Buffett. Trade them and you move as far away from Warren Buffett as you can. If you like action, you go to the casino. With a measured amount of money, that's it. Go. When you invest with serious long-term intentions. Nobody would go buy a business with the idea of flipping it. Next week, next month, I wonder what my building is worth. I wonder what I could get for my wrecking business. Nobody does that. It's a long-term, thoughtful, how am I going to grow this business, position it, and then maybe I sell it somewhere down the road at retirement or 10 years from now or whatever. Nobody thinks like that, but when we buy stocks, we want to trade them. Why? It's not what the greats do. So we want to talk about how to not do that because it's not easy. It is easy. Just don't do it. As Bob Newhart wonderfully says in his little video, stop it. Stop it. S-T-O-P, new word, I-T, stop it. Stop it. Just stop doing that. Well, stop it. Don't do that. I mean, we know all of these things. Lots of things are hard. We wanted to make them easy. I understand that. Ray, I got to pick on Ray. Ray bought a cup of coffee from Dutch Brothers yesterday. So we were talking. I said, Ray, how much is a cup of coffee a day for 40 years? And he's heard me rant for 30 years about this stuff, right? It's $1.2 million. A cup of coffee a day, $1.2 million. I don't have a problem with a cup of coffee if that's what you want, but know what you're buying. Here's my $1.2 million. Now give me free one cup of coffee for the next 40 years. That's what it is. I don't want $1.2 million worth of coffee. I'll go to the office. It's free. It's free. Everybody has their own things they spend money on and do things. I just say you have to make your choices. Make your choices. All right. I can go on that for a long time, and I don't want to go on that for a long time. Let's talk about Ken Fisher. Let's talk about advisors. What do they do? What do you do? We all think, because this is the place you can measure it, right? What do you get from a financial advisor? Investment advice. Okay. What else? I don't know. I don't know. Investment advice. You know what I mean. It's investment advice. Yeah. No, it's that. Okay. Yes, there's some of that. Yes, it's important to have that relationship and buffer there. And all kinds of statistics show that. And we can talk about that. It's a very important part. But it's the part you can measure. Can you measure peace of mind? I mean, you can feel it, like you feel love. But can you measure it? Can you say, I my love level is high? High as what? High as what? But you see, if your returns are, well, here's what the S&P 500 did. Here's what I did. We can measure that. Can we measure the planning process so that you don't run out of money? What do you mean? Well, I have peace of mind because I'm positioned so that no matter how long I live, nobody can guarantee the future, but it looks awfully certain that I won't run out of money. Well, that's a pretty good feeling. Can you measure that? No, but it feels good. Well, how are you doing? Here's the real answer. How am I doing compared to what? To what I'm trying to accomplish? Or do you mean some arbitrary index that they point to that has nothing to do with my objectives? Which do you mean? But it's the only thing we can measure, and human beings need to measure. So we're measuring our success rate instead of feeling our success rate. And don't get me wrong. I'm a pretty touchy-feely guy, but I'm not about emotions with investing, okay? At all. We have to pull away from that. But let's get into what we can measure, what we can know. And then let's back out to what it is advisors really should be doing and what you should be expecting of advisors. So there's one out there that puts himself out, so we got to take some shots at him, okay? It's Ken Fisher. Most advisors are this. Why do some advisors say you should do that? All annuities are bad. I'm not going to disagree with Mr. Fisher on that. Not all. I don't like the all comment. Most all is what I would put. Not all. Not remotely all. Investing isn't that easy. All people that sell you equity indexed annuities are annuity pimps. They're high commission pimps. All are. I will say all are, because some of those annuities are so bad. They're trapped. The commissions are so high. They can't ever work. And as Mr. Fisher says, there's always a better opportunity, a better solution to that than annuities. There is. But not all annuities are bad. They're not. There are circumstances where somebody needs a lifetime income, and only an annuity can do that. On a guaranteed basis. Only an annuity can do that. There are circumstances, very few, that you couldn't find another solution, but there are some. And in the heat of the crisis, when people wouldn't invest and needed some kind of guarantee, not an equity indexed annuity guarantee, but needed some kind of a guarantee, it was a wonderful solution. Or what if you're the only person the money is about? You'd have no kids. You have really no legacy to leave. You don't want to leave any money. Maybe it's okay that a bucket of it, some of it, a little of it, runs out when you do and maximizes your income and your security during life. Not all of it, not even close to half of it. Only a tiny bit of it should be like that because you have no flexibility. But there are cases. What I'm saying is, yeah, I'm going to give a hat tip that maybe 10% of all annuities written are okay. So I'm going to say I don't totally disagree with his statement because that means 90% are written by people that are doing nothing but stealing money from you. I agree. And they are doing it willingly. Not there to help. So how is his, what does he do? So he wants you to invest, and they charge a lot. But they tell you that, you know, all the fees and inside there, that they're really charging less than other people. How so? Oh, the mutual fund fees and so on and so forth. Well, you know what? That's why the world of ETFs, exchange-traded funds, has popped up to be so big. It helps keep those costs down. And look what's happened in mutual funds. One famous family, and I'm not going to say who because of all the disclosure rules, and it doesn't matter who because they're all going this way. is down to 0.35% per year. And here's the secret. They've destroyed the markets. Destroyed the markets. For decades. Just not every year. Because nobody does every year. Nobody. So it doesn't cost a lot. And when we give some of these wacky examples, it'd be like me comparing the cost of investing to an equity indexed annuity. That's not fair. That's just criminal products over here on the side. Okay, they're not criminal. They're technically allowed by the Department of Insurance in the state of Idaho. But I wouldn't use them, and CFPs can't, because we'd have to fully disclose the fact that they are basically stealing money from our clients. Hi, if you want to sign up for this, sign right here, because I'm stealing your money. That's probably not something I want to have that discussion with somebody about. Although we are licensed to do that. I wouldn't have that discussion. So we go through this process of trying to say all things are all bad and all these things, but it is not really true. Costs are coming down all across the board. So costs are not low. How about performance? Because they're not doing all the other things we're going to talk more about later. How's performance? They don't give a track record. Did you know that? Well, no. How have you done over the last 5 years, 10 years, 3 years, 1 year? Can't tell you that. And they don't. But we found it. Because Fisher started a mutual fund a number of years ago. If you want to look it up, it's P-U-R-I-X. Purix. P-U-R-I-X. They got rid of it. They got rid of it a couple years ago. Why? I think they got rid of it because performance was really, really good and money was pouring in? No. So their best ideas, their best picks, in other words, what they were doing with their clients, with their stocks, was horrible performance. So they got rid of it. So that's the only, I don't know, it's anecdotal? No, it's not. These are their picks. This isn't just like, I think, no, these are their picks. So the only thing they have to sell is better performance and lower cost, and neither are true. But that's really not the point of advisors. I always think of it this way. Once, maybe 1.5 times, right? On average, every 10 years. Human beings don't want to make the right decision when it comes to investing. They want to get out. They want to get out in the financial crisis. At the very least, they need somebody to talk to because it's getting scary. You know what? We needed somebody to talk to. Ourselves. Us. Us. That's why being in part of an organization is so important. Hanging out a shingle and calling yourself an advisor and sitting in your own kitchen is not, you need people. You need people. You need people to bounce ideas off of, talk, think. Think out loud together, right? It's not groupthink. Not when you think out loud together and you're free to ask questions and bounce ideas and disagree. We all need that. Because what would you have done? What did you do in 08 and 09? Did you actually add towards the bottom? Did you add to your investments? Did you get more aggressive when prices were good? Probably not. Probably not. Those are, according to statistics, that's worth 2 percentage points a year. That's according to Vanguard. That's their numbers, not mine. I don't know. It can be worse. It can be tragic. Those people that sold out at the beginning of 09, life-changing event. When did you get back in? 100%, 200%, 300% later? It's a problem. But that's not really it. It's peace of mind. The highest level clients reach and it doesn't happen overnight, is not when they stop looking. It's when they recognize that the burden of their decisions, they've passed on. Yeah, they watch. They maybe even continue to learn about investing. All of those things. But the day-to-day, they just don't, they've taken that off of their shoulders and handed it over. How much is peace of mind worth? I don't know. I do know in different areas of my life, it's worth a lot. In others, not as much. But I can't define it. But I know it when it's there. Like love, right? You know. But I can't measure. I just know. It's a very, very, very big deal. It's a big deal not to worry. It's a big deal to be able to talk about your goals, objectives, to cry if you have to because you lost a loved one. What do I do now? He, she always did the finances. What do we do? What's next? What's the next step? I don't know. 1-800. You have that. And maybe someday computers can have that kind of empathy, but I don't think so. Not in my lifetime, I don't think so. And some people don't want that. I got that. And that's okay. It's all right. But I think when we think we got life, we got things in life, we know what we're doing about things, that probably there's a bit of arrogance with that. Because when I think about it in my life, and this has been a thing of hard knocks for me, it has. A thing of I don't want to spend the money, I'm too cheap to do this, this, and this, that I've come to understand that I need expertise. I'm not going to go online. I am going to go online. We all do. But I'm not going to go online and think I'm going to figure out what's wrong with my body. If I know something's wrong, and I like to think that I'm in good enough shape to know when something's wrong, then I want a doctor. I want to talk to my doctor. When I have a tax concern, I'm not going to look it up. Because I know what's going to happen. I'll end up having other questions. Or what if I misread? And I don't mean like make a mistake, but I misunderstand verbiage in an area that is not my expertise. It's money well spent. I've been one lawsuit in my life. And if I didn't have attorneys, I just would have rolled over. And they're expensive. I don't like them. I don't like them at all. I don't like them at all. It's a mean, nasty business, and it goes on forever, and the objective is to drag it out. I don't like it. But I gotta get in that mucky sandbox with somebody because that's not my world. And I think that's no different than the financial world. There's a lot going on out there, and I know there's a lot of bad advisors. There are. But for those that are dedicated and their hearts are right, you know, and I don't want to get all misty-eyed about this, but it's a privilege in life to do what I do. To financially minister to people is a gift. It's not something I want to retire from. People ask me this question all the time. Why would I want to retire from that? I get to live life with hundreds, thousands of people. And yes, it's full of tragedy too, and it's full of tough times. 08 and 09 was not a picnic. But, you know, those are also very, very, very good times to look back on and realize you made a difference in people's lives to be there. So if you're not comfortable with your advisor, it's for those reasons. It's not because performance isn't right or whatever. I mean, I get that. But are you in commission products? Shouldn't be. Do you have the feeling that you're understood and heard and your objectives are dealt with? That's what you should be focusing on because we can't control the future. We can't. And sure, there's lots of other things. What do I think? Tax questions. Wow, what should we be doing about this or this? Bam, do this. I remember a situation, and this is not boasting or anything, but I remember a situation we ran into not very long ago and just talked about yesterday. Incredibly tiny little piece of tax code, but I'd used it before. And we saved that client over $100,000. No kidding. It's not, no joke. And it was all a tax thing. And their accountant liked the idea, by the way. It wasn't just made up. So these are little things that come together that are like, wow, this can be a really important process. And it's fun to do. But the only thing we can measure is performance. And that's why I bring it up. I'm not putting down Ken Fisher. I mean, he obviously spends millions on, I mean, you can't turn on the TV. You can't turn on the radio and not hear his ads. You can't. I wouldn't be surprised as in this hour we don't hear ads. It's huge. But if it's all performance-based, it's fair to ask the question, what has the performance been? PURIX, their fund of their best ideas, did not do well. And to me, though, I don't think that's what this is about. I think financial advisors, true, good, certified financial planners that are working hard day in and day out are way more than performance-driven. Or let me rephrase it this way. The only performance that matters is that your objectives are hit. That's it. Are we measuring the right thing? Perhaps you have some comments, questions about that. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Come on, let's ring them up. Let's go. We had more calls in the first hour. That makes no sense at all to me. Come on, give us a call. 580-KIDO. Wages are picking up. Interest rates hit 3% this week. Retail sales, booming. Sugar high. Just temporary. Next year we're going to crash. Let's double down on our bets that we've said since 10. Market's going to get cut in half, go down 90%. We're going to have 90% inflation, 50%, whatever. Blah, blah, blah. Never wrong. Never wrong. Because if you're wrong on the, and you're bearish, like, the world's going to end. Guess it didn't. People spend millions of dollars. I mean, can you believe that there are like blood moons and Shemitahs? Okay. That was going to take the market down. Now, you think I'm making fun of it, but this was sold like a million books. A million of them. I mean, I can understand if you're a caveman and the moon turns red. I thought it was fascinating. I mean, but I can understand being frightened as a caveman. But when they can explain why it's red, and there's three of them in a year, which is very unusual, and it's reddish, not exactly dripping with blood, but they're called blood moons. Because I think you get two full moons or something in a month. That's what a blood moon is. There's like, you get three of them in a year, really rare. Okay. We had them. And because we have some weird calendar event, that means the stock market is going to crash. Really? Yeah, the Shemitah happens every 7 years, and then this and this. I mean, and like the most rudimentary of calculations. I mean, you don't have to, I'm not going to spend time chasing down Shemitah-ism, okay? But I had to at least just take a peek and go, yeah, okay, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years. Okay, so the market boomed that year, and that year. Right, we didn't have a market crash in that seventh year. Wow. Great backtesting, data mining, numerology. Not at all. Not even remotely real. But it sold. This stuff does. As long as it's negative. They can be wrong and wrong and wrong. I mean, I've pointed out some of these folks, I mean, all the time. I mean, We got, I don't know, see, Robert Shiller has gotten to be really smart, right? I mean, and he is really smart because he already won a Nobel Peace Prize, or Nobel Prize for Economics, not Peace. Okay? For some economic theory about the Shiller-PE ratio or something like that. And he's got an index named after him for housing and all this stuff. So he's brought on all the time. He was a doomsdayer till about a year ago and then started sliding in these comments. You know, the market could go a lot higher before we have that correction. Could. Yes, under Trump, things are going a little bit better than we expected, so things could go even higher before they crash. So we went from crash, stay out, in 10, 11, 12. You know, the Shiller Index shows that we're way overpriced in the market, blah, 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 to now kind of shifting. Now, how good was that? A, it is good to change your mind when the facts change. B, he should have just said, I've been wrong. That would have been more honorable. And three, what good did it do to get you out of the market at 10,000 and been back in at 25? And he's still not saying it. He's still being the perfect economist talking out both sides of his mouth. It could go higher before it goes down. What did you just say? Get out or get in? What did you just say? Because I'm confused. Should I get in, and will you let me know right before I should get out? Because it could go higher. But it might not, and that makes you right. What do I do? What information have you given me that is worth anything? Anything. He's not far and away not the worst. We got Mark Faber, who, epic decline ahead. Stocks to plummet 40%. Epic decline ahead. Something will happen. I swear it'll happen. It really will. It really, 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 I promise. It really will. It'll happen. Harry Dent, author of Dow 35,000 in 1999. Genius, obviously. Didn't quite get there. Goes negative. As in epic declines. I don't know what epic means, but they're, yeah, at least this guy, Faber, at least he came out and defined epic as 40% or greater. Okay? Although in 2013, he said stocks would end 20% lower. Now he's doubling down, going to 40%. Harry Dent sees a crash in 2013. Thanks, Harry. Dow 35,000, now you're the doomsdayer. Good. Thank you. It'll sell more books, I'm sure, and newsletters. Careful what we read. Careful the inputs. Deep breath. Step back. Understand, being negative is a winner in newsletter land. And you don't ever have to explain why you lost people so many millions or billions of dollars being negative. You just get to have people subscribe. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Please do give us a call. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Please do join us, though, on the phones at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, I often, you know, reflect on the long-term nature of stocks, right? And how we get caught up in the day-to-day. And I hate to quote little short-term things, but this one kind of points to how short-term we think, right? And that's our local stock, Micron. So Micron was crushed last week, 10%. I mean, in a day, 10%. Whew, just the bottom fell out. Why? Well, it's seen as a commodity chip player. When chip prices go down, Micron gets crushed. Chip prices up, Micron does well. Totally cyclical company, and I'm not sure that's true. But it certainly was true for the day and the week, right? So Micron flies up to over $50 a share, all the way back to 40. That's a 20% plus decline. Pretty big decline. And investors are right to worry about those kinds of declines, especially in a stock like Micron. That goes up, down, up, down, up, down, doesn't pay a dividend, has never bought back stock. All they do is they spend $1 billion on a new fab, and then they go into debt paying for it all when the times are bad. Horrid. I mean, their history is riddled with near bankruptcies. Not the last several years. We got this nice thing called an oligopoly going on. Now, what is that? That means everybody kind of, it's not a monopoly. There's enough players in it. It's not like it's just two. There's a little bit more than that. It's just a nice little three people make almost all the chips in the world. And they're not pals. You know, they're punching it out, fighting each other and stuff like that. And something will happen. Chinese get in, Apple gets a Toshiba deal bought, and then they spend $10 billion and bam, you got lots of supply. And they're a big user of chips. They make all their own chips. Big problem on the horizon. A long ways away. And it certainly hasn't happened. But right now, you've got Samsung, you've got Micron, and you've got Hynix. And that's all you have, basically. That's like, I don't know, 80, 90% of the whole world's supply of chips. And they're all getting along swimmingly, meaning nobody's building up too many fabs. They're all just happy to go along and make lots of money. And I'm sure there's no collusion here. I'm not implying there is. I just think there's a gentleman's agreement here. Let's not oversupply like we always have in the past and ruin our business. So they have a nice business going. But chip prices still are volatile and people are worried about it. But here's the big picture that I'm talking about. Micron was at 5 not that many years ago. 5 to 50, we pull back to 4. If you would have thought a few years ago buying it at $5, or even if you waited till it was at 10, would you be complaining that it was at 40? No, no, you would not. That's what I mean by the market and pullbacks. We get focused on the short term. Imagine if your portfolio went down 20%. You'd be like, ah! But would you be happy if you'd put in $100,000 and then years later you said, it's $800,000? Because I put money into 401k all those years and years and years. I ended up putting in $100,000. It's worth $800,000 today. No. You know what most people would say? They would say, I lost $200,000 because it went from $1 million down to $800,000. That's what they say. That's what they feel, more importantly. But that's crazy. Who says that? I'm not happy from $100,000 to $800,000. Of course you are. Would be. If that was your perspective, but it's not. It's what happened lately. And losses are always bigger than gains. So we always remember our last loss. Got to have the right perspective, don't we? Got to have the right perspective. Here's a story of a mutual fund. And it's not the best mutual fund over the last 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years. It's not. Not even close. But it's a fine enough fund. It's been around since 1934. On a one-year basis, this fund, which, by the way, has actually beat the market over time, so it's a little more than 10% return, 11, I think, something like that. Doesn't really matter. Since 1934. Pretty good. You know, $10,000 is worth $150 million or some ridiculous number. It's so big you can't even wrap your mind around it. It is that big. Okay? But during that, if you were to invest in this, exactly one-third of the time, you would lose money. If you said, oh, that's it, I'm down 5%, this is stupid, I could have gotten 2% at the bank, this is just stupid, I don't even know why I buy stocks. My granddaddy was right, stay away from the market, it's terrible. Okay, all right, that's pretty short-sighted, but okay. We're going to measure it on a one-year basis. If we go to 3 years, get this. Now, we go from 33% of the time losing money to 13. Almost 9 times out of 10, you win on a three-year basis. But you don't just win. We're not going to, because I'm happy with the 2% of the bank. Okay, good, fine. Because it doesn't go bounce around, and my granddaddy told me stocks are stupid. Okay, You could lose all your money. All right, okay, calm down. 10 is what this averages in the long run. And almost 90% of the three-year periods is up. Huh? That's crazy good. We go out to five-year periods of time. 7%, over 90% of the time we win. But we don't just win. We win by a lot. Are we going to perceive a company, a mutual fund, the market, our investment plan, our lifetime investment plan as a one-year thing, a three-month thing? What have you done for me this quarter? Or do we think of it long-term? Because over 10-year periods, it's never lost, not once. Not one time. So you have the best investment on the planet over the long term, okay? Meaning rate of return, period. That's all we're going to measure it on. Rate of return, way higher than anything else. Way, so much higher, it's not even close. Fair enough? Okay? And over no 10-year periods have you lost money. Give me some of that. And please, dear Lord, take my eyes off the statement so I don't mess this up. Because we have a great way of overthinking and being clever by half, don't we? All right, I need your calls. I really, really do. Let's finish this up. After this break, we're going to finish it up with your phone calls. 580-5436. Somebody has a question. I know you do. You have to. The world is full of questions. We'll be right back. Hello, and thanks for listening, and way thank you to the callers now for responding, and if I don't get to all of you, I will after the program take your calls, okay? So we're going to bounce through them as quick as we possibly can, and I know we got another call in there, but Ray was juggling several calls, so be patient when you call in. Sometimes there's other callers on. Let's go to Curtis. Curtis, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is Curtis. I'm 66, and I've got roughly 60% of my money's in equities, mostly low-cost index funds, and 40% in fixed income. And do you think that's a good balance, or I have too much or too little in equities?
I would say, first off, probably too little, but we have to decide what it is we're trying to do, right? Okay. And a lot of things come into play, but are you drawing any income from this, or do you need to, or
no,
do you need to
I'm
soon?
Not drawing any income.
Okay. I would probably, if you're not, I would be, at this time, with interest rates as low as they are, I would definitely be steering more towards stocks. Now, that doesn't mean more low-cost index funds. It doesn't. I'm not saying you can't use some of the lower-cost ETFs, but I'd rather you be looking for what I would call smart beta things, things that are thinking through the market. So you're not just generally in the market. Are we looking for some dividend payers? Do you own enough real estate, which has a nice dividend to it now and is actually publicly traded real estate is selling below its net asset value? I'm not trying to make a big sector bet here, but I'm trying to bring down your overall risk of market decline, okay? At the same time, we move money out of the bond piece because the rates of return or the return expectation on bonds is zero to me, right? Even if interest rates don't move, you're below the inflation rate, right? So I don't like bonds. I don't want to hold 40%. And then people will argue I want to go short term. That's fine. Put a year's worth or 2 years worth of reserves there. But 40% to me is too much, Curtis. And so I would look for some other low-cost solutions or pay a manager. And I even mentioned one of them earlier and how if you really look through, you'll find some very, very low-cost, fully managed funds that are going to take a little bit of the sting out if the market declines, okay?
All right.
I just think that when we go in index, we're buying the biggest ones and we have the bigger swings, right? Because the overall index can fall 50% when, in fact, your portfolio shouldn't be, and that's not just because you've got 40% in fixed. It's also because you've got other areas, whether they're higher dividend paying, lower volatility than the overall market.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify it. I am not a fan of bonds right now, so my fixed income is in a short-term CD ladder.
Yeah, and I would avoid that too, because I think you've got some better choices in ETF land that you can sell. So if we got a sell-off, you would be able to go in and sell. And with a CD, you are going to have a penalty. And so I would look at ETFs for the short-term cash solution, because you can get them with durations that are actually 3 months, 4 months, and are paying 2%. I would rather do that.
Okay.
Because it gives you kind of liquidity that you want if you're waiting for some kind of a pullback, number one. Number two, there are also some positive return expectations, whether it's writing covered calls, things like that against a portfolio that would allow you to draw some income and have less volatility than the market. So rather than laddering out short term, I think there's some other solutions. And one more I'll throw out are floating rate notes. I think that's another solution you should be looking at. Okay?
All right.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Curtis. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. And let's go ahead and go to Basil. Basil, how are you? What a great name.
Oh, good morning. Actually, basil is a seasoning. I am Basil. Basil is Orthodox saint, but I am no saint.
Okay. I like it. I still like the name.
Thank you. You talk about newsletters. I have this evil desire. I like to read newsletters for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this common theme, which probably speaks to the thing you said earlier, is when you read a newsletter, we go back in time. Someone said stock market is driven by fear and greed. You remember hearing that?
Certainly.
When you look at the newsletter, the first thing they do is they instill fear. We are going to have this crash. China is going to nuke us. Who knows? But you have fear. And then they say, but if you buy our newsletter, here you get advice. We send you books where you will profit during this horrible crash. And so what you see is these two things playing against each other, fear, greed, constantly in these newsletters. It mm-hmm. is like a formula. And it is always amazing to see what these guys do. This is what I call my vulgar entertainment. But watch that. So just small comment, and thank you for your program.
Yeah, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And you're absolutely – I think you're spot on. It really makes a great point. It is, because you can't get people – this goes on into the news as well. We can't get people – if everything isn't an epic – did you hear even the governor was talking about – governor of North Carolina. This is epic flooding. Okay? They can't even just say it's flooding. Everything is hyperbole, right? And so we have epic market collapse coming. We have, again, fear, greed, we're playing on it, and we're getting to the point, if you will, where we're desensitized as well. It's not like, if it's not epic or unbelievable or horrifying, we're not even going to watch. Steers us in the wrong direction. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Richard on the road. Richard.
Hello.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I don't understand selling short.
Ah.
It makes no sense to me.
You know what? That's a tough concept, but I'm going to try, okay? So first of all, let's... What's that?
And I'm waiting.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to try. All right. So what you basically have is long and short. Like if I'm long, I'm hoping something goes up over the long term, right? I own it. I'm long it. Short is I want it to go down. So why am I selling short? What is that doing? I'm betting that something is going to go down. Now, let's do something simple, and then I'll circle back to stocks, okay? So if I am selling short, I could actually, let's go back to commodity days where this kind of started. And so I'm an oil producer, and I think oil prices are fine at, let's just call it $50 a barrel. I'm fine. I make money, but I don't have all my oil right now, but I am going to be pumping oil in the coming months. And so I'm willing to say for the next year, I want to sell 10 million barrels of oil each month. And so I can go ahead and sell it short. I don't have it, meaning I don't own it, so I'm selling it, and then I'm going to produce it, okay? So I lock in a price. That's kind of where it started. And let's say I'm an airline, and I'm going, I think $50 a barrel is fine. I'm going to go ahead and buy it in case prices go up. I can lock in profitability assuming I can fill the seats of my airplane, okay? So you have a real market there that has real need for buyers and sellers. Let's go to the stock market. Now you have traders that want to, let's say, sell a position short because they believe Amazon or whoever is overpriced and is going to go down. That's not the only reason they sell short, but I got to keep this as simple as I can. So what it is I'm going to go out and I literally borrow the stock because I can't sell stock I don't own. So I borrow it from somebody, a custodian, that has that stock. There may or may not be a fee to that, but let's assume there's not for points of discussion. I'm simply going to now sell that so I have a short position that someday I have to buy and cover. Someday. So buying and covering means I neutralize a position, and I am just simply saying I am now betting that that stock goes down. It's been a bad bet over time because the stock market goes up. Sometimes you get a good position like an Enron WorldCom and it goes to zero and you make lots of money. But that's what short selling is. Sometimes people do it as a hedge, but most of the time as a bet. Richard, hopefully I nailed it. If I didn't, I'm sorry. Please call me back and hold me accountable. All right? But I got to go. We are out of time. Thanks again to all the phone callers. If you have any questions, comments, again, shoot those over to petsofinancial.com. Go Broncos. What a great game this is going to be this afternoon. Big game for them, of course. Let's hope they pull it off. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening.